So welcome to the Real PE podcast. To be quite clear, of course, Real PE is a brand and an approach and all that type of stuff and services and products and all professional learning. But when we're talking about this podcast, Real PE, we're meaning a broader sense of talking about real physical education, what it should look like, the challenges we face, and perhaps hopefully some of those solutions. And the format hopefully should be meaningful and relevant to anyone out there who wants to make a difference, wants to see progress, wants to do some new stuff in physical education. So I'm welcoming today Greg Dreyer. Hello. How you doing, Greg? Greg, I suppose in my words, is a really thoughtful, distinguished leader in physical education.
Very nice of you. Thank you.
Good, good. And I think he won't like me saying this, but he is a proper disruptor in his thinking. I love the fact that he will openly challenge the status quo. He won't just go on the soft ground of previous or traditional PE. He'll talk about the very real and relevant problems of today. And I think the extra special bit you'll give us, Greg, is that you tend to be interested in evidence and really beginning to understand and gaining insights. And I feel as if I really appreciate you bringing that today. So,
thanks for the intro and pleasure being here.
Good man, thank you. And thank you for that lovely hug I had. Yes. Can I just say before I introduce Tony, I used to be intimidated by you quite a lot, Greg. I feel like you used to scare me a bit. Not like physically, but like as if I might say the wrong words and then you would sort of like expose me as not being very clever. But nowadays, big awful hug.
I can't believe that. Yeah, I'm so sorry if I gave that impression to you or anybody else.
Well, you give me a proper hug and then a metaphoric hug all yesterday evening.
Thank you.
Really talking about
the hugs are better.
Lovely stuff, so thank you. And we've got Tony Smythe, who is professional learning guru, we describe it at Real PE, and fabulous interest in really making a difference and making an impact and actually proving that we make an impact. A real specialism for Tony. I think we'll have an opportunity because we're going to work together over many weeks on this, Tony. We'll have an opportunity to say a bit more about you during that time. But are you happy with that as an intro for now?
Lovely. Thanks, Ronnie. It's really great to be here. Lovely to be in a room with Greg as well.
Yeah, it's quite exciting, isn't it? Yeah. So you're encouraged to challenge us, Greg, as much as you can, as much as you like. And if we don't like it, we'll probably edit it or something like that. So I thought as a starter, let's throw some anchors down. And before we start talking about really exciting ways in which we can sort of solve some of these issues and some of the challenges we're facing, how about tell us, from your opinion, what does success look like in PE? How we know if we're getting there? What does it look like?
Right. Yeah, well, it's a good place to start because obviously if we're clear on that, then it's easy, as you mentioned, evidence. It's easy to know if we're making progress. Clearly, we're working in a really contested space. We're working in a subject area that has got so many different success criteria depending on who you're talking to. And I think we've contributed to our own confusion. And therefore, it becomes really difficult to measure so many different outcomes. So I'm a real strong advocate of really straightforward success outcomes. I think at the heart of what we're doing is, I've hung all my work off of a guy called James McAllister who wrote a piece around what does it mean to be physically educated. And his key components, and I won't quote it word perfect, but it's something along the lines of someone who freely chooses to arrange their life so that they can take part in physical activity so that the activity supports their life flourishing. And there's a lot of component parts to that. So the first thing is they freely choose. There's autonomy there. And there's also the central to it is that they are physically active. Now, over the years, and you know, many people would be very familiar with this, there's been all sorts of crises described, whether they're social crises that have come into physical education, whether that be the obesity crisis, quote unquote, whether it be the mental unwellness, whether it be kids lacking resilience or certain character traits. And they're all deficit models. They're all things that are wrong with kids. And they're all things that physical education has jumped up and down and said, we can solve this. Now, look, I'm not for a moment saying that they're not possible outcomes, but I don't think they're the drivers of success. A kid is not going to develop teamwork, social skills, or resilience, or integrity, or any, you know, some people nowadays are talking about employability. They're not going to develop those if they are not physically active. So at the heart of what we're doing is a very simple mission, in my opinion, that they need to be introduced to being physically active. That physical activity is making a significant, wonderful, brilliant, magical contribution to their lives. What happens after that, whether they are healthier, whether they're mentally healthier, whether they are have got certain character traits, are possible outcomes. But the success is that they're in the game, and I think we should stick with that.
I love the fact, can I just ask you a question about that then? So historically, we would try and define physical activity and physical education as two separate things. I've been to a fair few conferences where people try and clearly do that.
Yeah.
I think what you're suggesting is that actually there's a core foundation, an environment for learning.
So I would
think with you out the room, people might try and say, he's not talking about education then, is he? So just explain that to us again. So you don't seem to be separating the two. You're kind of seeing how they layer.
And I think that is a possible misconception in how I'm framing it. And I think the fact that you picked up on that suggests that I don't explain it sufficiently clearly. And also,
The truth is, Greg, I do understand it. But I think for this purpose, I think people want to give you the opportunity
I've been challenged on that recently, and it made me really think about how I explain that. So let's start with the orthodox three separate areas, that physical education, sport, and physical activity are sort of three interlinking but distinct. That's the orthodox message, right?
Yeah.
And we've been saying that. The PE community has been saying that for a long time. And, you know, I'm not sure where it gets us. I think it's a very insular conversation. I think to a layperson, I think to a parent, it's meaningless. If a parent walks past a playground and sees a PE lesson that where the kids are doing stuff with a football, the parent is like, they are learning, hopefully, or they're doing football. Now, we can say, well, actually, they're not doing football, they're doing physical education. What do we sound like when we say that? So when in my last job at Kingston, when we thought long and hard about this, we arrived at a simple place. And we were also coaches in sport. So we arrived at a simple place. If there's a responsible adult working with children in any context, in the physical space, it is always only, and I'm going to really emphasise, only about the progress and development of the children. That's whether they're doing sport, whether they're doing the daily mile, physical activity interventions, whether they're doing PE, a responsible adult should only be focused on the progress and development that the children are making in that space. So the outcome is to learn to be physically active and learn where physical activity fits into their lives, to give them the tools for that. Now, that's a simple outcome, or it sounds like a simple outcome, but the process of getting there, I think, is clearly very, very challenging.
And we get to speak about a lot of that over the many weeks. We'll get an opportunity to discuss that. I still love the fact there's such a strong anchor in the ground. It means that we can't go too far away from what we're ultimately trying to achieve. And it means all of the conversations eventually have to show that they're somehow linking and getting us towards that place. And there's a simplicity in that. I actually would argue against anyone that says it's complex what you're saying. I actually think you're doing the opposite.
Thanks, yeah.
I think you're actually saying it much more simple way, and I love that. And before I go to Tony then, in terms of answer to that first question, again, having my words with this, but I'm feeling it's almost like the integrity conversation. I feel as if you're saying the true sense of whether your physical education curriculum is successful, the true judgment of that, is what they do when you're not there. It's like when they're not in your lesson, when you're not in front of them, when they've left your school, when they're away for the weekend. Is that fair to say, or is that too simple?
Yeah, it's the relationship that the kid has with physical activity. And if it's a really strong and positive and deep relationship, they are going to want to be physically active because it brings something to their life. If a kid has got a strong and deep and positive relationship with the written word, they will pick up a book or a magazine or any other reading material. So they will go there.
I'm loving that, Tony. So Greg's saying a relationship with physical activity is what it's really about, and the quality of that is that in your world too? Is that?
Can
is
I just say, great to have Greg in the room.
It's great, amazing.
It's a bit of a mic drop moment. I was a bit, oh no, how am I going to follow that when he did his first bit? But yeah, fantastic, Greg. I love the kind of freedom of or the free choice to be physically active. I'm going to take it maybe a bit further about the longevity of that relationship with physical activity. We're talking about that positive relationship with physical activity. I love the thought that we can set them up from primary school to have confidence and the freedom and the passion to continue to be physically active through secondary school experience, whatever that might look like and feel like through their education. But that maybe that ultimate success is that we're tooling them up and giving them what they need to take physical activity into adulthood and to make their free or have that freedom of choice into adulthood to choose whatever it might be. And sometimes when we talk about it, we're saying, but choosing to garden, choosing to ride bikes with their grandchildren, choosing to have confidence to take their children swimming, yeah. Dance in the kitchen with their kids. But, yeah. You know, the choice yeah. to or the confidence to keep physical activity in their life into adulthood.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I come in on that?
Then? Yeah. So,
So I really hear you, Tony. And I think, you know, we've been aspiring as a professional community to, I don't think I've ever read a policy document, a school one or a national one, that doesn't talk about long-term physical activity, healthy, active lives. The language is, you know, more or less the same. And it's more or less the same in every country I look at. I've just been doing a lot of work with SHAPE in America, and then their revised standards speaks the same language. I'm all for trying to make things straightforward for practitioners. And I think there's an awful lot of stuff around at the moment that makes things really unduly complicated for practitioners. And therefore, you get like a head cloud and you don't really know how to navigate, which is why we're discussing success. Like, where do we want to get to, and do we know if we're getting there? So I suppose my one question or unease with anything around lifetime of physical activity, which of course is an aspiration, is how do we know when you're working with year fives and sixes what those kids are going to be doing when they're 45
Fabulous.
And 46?
Well,
that's my question actually to you, Tony, from that. So give us some indicators, some things that you might like to see that would tell us we're on that journey, the sort of your little...
It was so interesting because I was going to come back to Greg and say, what do we think the balance is between confidence and tools in your bag? So, you know, when we're looking at the end of year six, and I was with a group full of subject leaders yesterday, a room full of subject leaders, asking them what their ambitious endpoints were for year six. Write down what it is you want your year sixes to be able to do or think or feel when they leave you.
Fabulous question.
And actually, they all went for the feelings bit first. They all went for, we want them to leave saying that PE's been fun. We want them to leave confident. We want them to leave having had a breadth of opportunity and maybe have made a choice about a physical activity they feel really passionate about and they love. Is it, you know, from, and in the room, people were talking about skateboarding or gymnastics or going to swimming. We talked about the relationship between how much influence they have and the family have, you know, in terms of those choices. Yeah. But they all talked about feelings first. And then when I challenged them, I said, can we have confidence and passion and those feelings? What happens if we have those things without skills or without competence?
Yeah,
what will happen to our relationship with physical activity if we feel all those things? And does it matter? So maybe a question for you would be, what are your thoughts around how important skills are? Because I think
getting better physically, more able physically.
Because those things are interlinked, aren't they? In terms of confidence comes with feeling competent at something.
Able to join in.
Yeah. How much does passion?
There's a bit of truth in that. Greg, the arms are folded here, so I'm sensing a balanced response to this one. Are we allowed to? Well, I'm going to rephrase Tony's question a little bit, and say, are we allowed to see progress in physical skills and competence as part of the journey, a part of one of the factors that might lead us to a to a more active.
Are you happy with the rephrasing, Tony?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Do you see what?
Are we allowed?
Did you see what he did very nicely? He accused me of mansplaining. But yes. Did it without like properly trashing me. You're absolutely right.
If I was going to ask you the question, I would say, does competence matter? So if I am a 45-year-old adult, does it matter whether I'm good or not? Or does it matter that I feel passionate to be involved, or I have a desire?
Competence
versus motivation, maybe.
So I'm increasingly fascinated with this very discussion. So the default position in the vast majority of PE that I see is start with the technical, start with the skills. Now, a very dear friend of mine in the States, a guy called Aaron Beatley, he talks about skills as Lego blocks. And with Lego blocks, you can build great stuff. But if you don't want to build stuff, you can have all the Lego blocks in the world and you're still not going to build stuff. So then it comes back to what the kids need to learn to be physically active, and are skills an essential part of that? And Tony, you used the phrase around, I think you used, if they're going to engage with something, and I think you said the something, if I heard you correctly, and I think defining the thing that they're doing is, so if they are doing, I don't know, an activity, a specific activity unit, cricket, what is cricket for a 7-year-old, for a 9-year-old, or for an 11-year-old, and what do they need to engage in it? Now, in its essence, cricket is a racing game where the batter has to race the ball to the base, right? There's nothing more to it than that.
There might be some people in Somerset who might to all of you out there. No, we are in Somerset, home of cricket in our county. No, you're right. It's a bat and ball game. It's a race.
To score, you've got to get home before the ball. That's a race, right? So the fielders are trying to reduce the time that the batter has, and the batter's trying to extend the time that they have to get to the bases, right? Now, in its simplest form, that doesn't need a bat. That can be thrown. The ball just needs to be sent or ejected into the field. There's lots of, and again, another really key conversation that I really enjoy having is what comes first, the execution of the skill or the thinking before the skill. So I've got the ball. I want to send it into the field. The first thing I need to think is, where am I going to send the ball? The skill just enables me to get the ball where I want it to go. So is the bat a hindrance to that? Now, of course, there might be people saying, yeah, but then how can you progress to team cricket or school cricket or club cricket? Which, okay, so this then comes back to the autonomy piece, hearing the kids, because skills and indeed fitness are only ways that we can answer the movement challenges that the activity is presenting to us.
Right.
But the movement challenge varies on how we're engaging with that activity. So to play social cricket in a park with my friends and family, I require a set of skills that enable me to unlock that.
A specific set of skills for that particular opportunity.
And I could play the French cricket thing where you hold the bat straight down or whatever it is.
On many beaches in the southwest, indeed, we see that.
And we've got a future podcast which is going to talk about how playing sport might not help us get better at sport. But that's for another day. But I think the principles here we're getting there. We're again with an anchor of an outcome that actually creating a positive relationship with that physical activity and learning a whole variety of some of it will be emotional, won't it? And it will be that 100%. Experience and connection. And some of it will be a thinking and some cognitive stuff and creative stuff. And some of that will be some physical stuff, which we should be able to celebrate progress with, wouldn't we, Tony? And in most of the schools we're working with. So if we were to, is there anything before I come to a conclusion on this, before we move on, is there anything else, Tony, from your perspective, that you would recognise as sort of success impact, if you like, in the journey towards having more children? I mean, I like to say every child, but it's more of a vision, that, isn't it, than a reality. But is there anything you would like to see on that journey, an impact towards that?
Yeah, we often talk to us, I'm going to speak really specifically about primary schools. That's where I spend most of my time and spend most of my time talking to subject leaders and head teachers. But when we're looking at defining success in those areas, I think we ask about physical success, so physical progress and skills learned. And we've just talked a little bit about that and what doors that opens and what feelings that might elicit in our young people. And sometimes we direct our primary schools towards talking about what does that mean? What other parameters of success are there? And we might ask them about how many of their children engage in activities outside of, and you touched on this, Greg, about that freedom of choice to be physically active outside of the classroom, outside of the PE environment. So how many of our young people engage? How engaged are they in the processes of physical activity and physical education and sport at school? And then how engaged are they in that wider offer and what else gets offered? How engaged are they in break times and lunch times? How engaged are they in our after-school offer? How engaged are they in a provision that's put on outside the curriculum? How many of them feel confident, happy, passionate to come and engage in that? And so a marker of success sometimes with our primary schools that they might not relate to the curriculum or the activity or the experiences is how many of your young people are choosing to extend their learning outside of an official environment.
Fabulous.
So that might be another. So pupil engagement in wider activity, and the very best schools will also track and monitor what their children are doing outside of school. And we know that heavily relies on family, other demographics, so wealth and motivation of the family, and, you know, so where children live, how supported they are. But actually, the very best schools will also track the choices that their children make outside of the school environment and link that back to the offer that they have in school and how they feel about it. So that pupil engagement can go even wider, further, by tracking their free choice for activity outside of school. So I would say that that is a real measure of success. And sometimes subject leaders will say, I see them for an hour of PE, or I see them for 2 hours. You know, can I really say that I've influenced that? And that's a question. But actually a wider PE in school spot offer can really influence how, and a culture that's created within a school can really influence a child's individual success in how they feel about it when we get it right. And we can see when it doesn't, when we get it wrong.
I'm loving the argument from the presentation, both of you, in the sense that it's a so what question, isn't it? So yes, in our curriculum, we are creating these skills. We are developing these experiences and these feelings and emotions, and hopefully we're encouraging children to think more and express themselves, and we can start getting into those. But I love the fact that we've reversed that now. We've said, no, let's be quite clear what the end goal is, and then we can begin to discuss what we might do on our curriculum that aligns with the outcomes that we would like to see for those young people. And that's what I love, again, about the way you frame that, Tony. You didn't go, I half expected you as a professional learning sort of specialist to start talking about some of the specifics we were going to do, but you immediately took us back to the indicators. And often that was outside of what we might see as historically see as the curriculum. You're seeing much more co-curriculum, extended curriculum.
Flip it on its head? Yeah. In that some of our subject leads might say, what influence can I have in 1 hour a week in PE? And then we might talk about their wider school, their school sport and PE offer and the influence they can have. And then we might talk to them about family engagement and the cultural messages that they send home about physical activity. We might talk about active travel. We might talk about all those things. And they might still think, how much influence can I really have? If we flip it on its head about influence, and we know that we have had conversations with adults who become teachers and educationalists who in their 1 hour of PE a week have had the worst experiences. So it only takes 1 hour a week with poor practice or a poor environment for young people to decide very early that physical activity is maybe not for them.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tony. And I think the... on 1 hour a week, you know, let's face it, is poor. You know, if a kid's only got 1 hour of curriculum time, you know, and we're sitting in a college over the road from, an independent school, and without getting into the conversations around the status of independent schools, it always strikes me that an 8-year-old in a state school with 1 hour a week might have a fifth, a sixth, a seventh of a kid of the same age who would be at an independent school, mm-hmm. and how can we justify mm-hmm. that? That's woeful. Now, I'm not to say I don't understand the pressures that the head teacher's under to make what I think is an ill-informed decision, a binary decision. They either do more math or they do more PE. I'm not sure that we work like that. But so if we go to, you know, that 1 hour a week, what influence can we have? There are so many ways of doing good rather than doing the harm that you touched upon. Language that we use, explaining to the children what success is, mm-hmm. Having inclusive assessment models. So going back to skill, just for a sentence, I'm not saying a child shouldn't be moving more skillfully as they progress through school, but they should be moving more skillfully than they did a couple of months ago.
100%.
Yes. Not compared to how close they're getting to the perfect model of hitting a forward Absolutely. Defensive shot.
Right.
So are they hitting more consistently? Are they hitting more balance? Are they being able to manipulate the bat or the ball more with more finesse or with more thought? That's charting. And that's a very Hannah Miller-Ofsted message. Know and show more. Mm-hmm. Now, you touched also upon what the subject leader said around feel. And I think that's the big thick part of know and show that's missing, because it should be, in my opinion, they should know more, they should be able to do more, and they should feel more, and they should feel stronger connections. And that effective domain probably doesn't fit into the Ofsted framework, but I don't want to go down that rabbit
hole. I'm stealing that immediately. Know more, show more, feel more. I'm taking that. That's a lovely phrase.
So we're coming to the end of our time with this one. Could I ask you to push you to maybe in two sentences summarise where you've got with this? If I had to ask you the same question again I did at the start through that discussion now, and say in two sentences, tell me what you really think we need to focus on as being ultimately our success criteria for physical education.
Well, I just think we need to stay true to what we've always said we're about. And I think our success is knowing if, how, when, why a child is or isn't engaging in physical activity in its broadest form in whatever setting. And I think if we stay true to that, we've got a very, very clear learning journey. It's an educational and an educative journey. We can then ask ourselves questions around what are the tools that are needed for a child to do that, which is complicated, and we might get onto that another time.
And Tony?
What he said. How to follow Greg. I think it's about a clear identification of what success looks like. So thinking for our practitioners about what they want to get to at the end. I think sometimes we start a journey in education, curriculum mapping, in the choices we make without knowing where we want to get to at the end. And I like the idea that Greg's explained it beautifully articulately, but we get to a point where the learning journey helps us to get to the success. But we must know what the success, what we would like personally. And I do believe it might be different for our schools, depending. I talked with a group yesterday about how it might look for a rural school, how it might look for an inner city school, for the children there, what their success might look like, how they might continue to participate, how they might feel, and the environment they've got to go and seek out those opportunities might be different. And there are some things that we could align for every child as being a successful thing. We could absolutely have some data around that, but then we'd have how the demographic, where we live and our environment influences that. But I think if we know what we would like success to be, and so my final thought would be to think about what we would like success to be for the children that we're working with.
So I think you're challenging.
And how we get there. And then think about, do we align how we get there to what we would like
it
to be?
That were really the three points I got from the conversation myself, what I heard. And I have to apologise because it's my own bias summary. I heard that, first of all, that we ultimately are, our role as educators is the end goal for these young people. It's about what they do when they're not with us and their choices they make. And I'm even prepared to say learn to be active. So first and foremost, absolutely having that anchor allows us to align everything there. I saw an acceptance that actually making some progress was there, but was a clear definition of what we meant by progress. There weren't sort of attainment goals or shouts or particular milestones to hit. They're about every child experiencing a bit of progress for them on their level, on their terms. And let's be honest, we all know from Sega and Nintendo from 20 years ago is there's an excitement from that learning, isn't there? There's an absolute connection that comes from knowing I'm getting better. Every one of people listening today will recognise that. So I think that for me is a massive, massive point. When we say every child, we literally mean that, but we literally also mean for every child there's a different progress. And the third point is that, and I think you perfectly summarised it, Tony, really. I don't think I'm going to paraphrase. I'm actually just going to say, yes, the challenge now is, if we've decided that success, if we decided these are some of the things we'd like to see on the way towards that success, then actually we now need to prove that we really mean that. So let's align your values, your beliefs, what you're saying to people and what you do. Because let's be honest, in the stress and the strain that's the education system that we have to work in, that's a very uncomfortable place to be is when those things aren't aligned. We can at least go home knowing that what we're trying to do, our intent, is completely aligned with our outcomes. I've absolutely loved hearing that stuff from you two. I'm buzzing. I'm already, I'm learning it on every sentence. So thank you so much, Greg and Tony. And look forward to really getting a bit deeper on this now about what it's actually going to do and what it will look like. Thanks, you.
Morning.
Thank you.